Road dogs, Billy Big Rigs, big strappers, flatbed cowboys, freight shakers, trucklets, 18-wheelers, deadheads, yard dogs. You got your ears on? Whatever you call yourselves or whatever call sign or moniker is thrust upon you, this episode's dedicated to all you truckers driving the boulevard, keeping our bellies full, shelves stocked, septics cleaned, and brains entertained with what you're hauling. In the eyes of this ratchet jaw, you're all good buddies, and I'm honored to have you listening. Maybe once in a while grab your CB, head to Sesame Street, and tell other drivers how to join this weirdo convoy. Appreciate it. May your brake checks be few, your shutter trouble be absent, and your bear bites non-existent. Keep it cool on the stool. This is Spooky Santa, and I'm 10 and on the side.
Stories and content in Weird Darkness can be disturbing for some listeners and is intended for mature audiences only. Parental discretion is strongly advised.
Welcome, Weirdos. I'm Darren Marlar, and this is Weird Darkness. Here you'll find stories of the paranormal, supernatural, legends, lore, crime, conspiracy, mysterious, macabre, unsolved, and unexplained. Coming up in this episode of Weird Darkness, it's Creepypasta Thursday, and I have three stories to share with you this week. While you're listening, you might want to check out the Weird Darkness website. At WeirdDarkness.com, you can find transcripts of the episodes, paranormal and horror audiobooks I've narrated, 24/7 streaming video of horror hosts and classic horror movies. You can find my other podcast, Church of the Undead. Plus, you can visit the Hope in the Darkness page if you're struggling with depression, anxiety, or thoughts of suicide. And you can also shop the Weird Darkness store, where all profits go to support depression awareness and relief. You can find all of that and more at WeirdDarkness.com. Now, bolt your doors, lock your windows, turn off your lights, and come with me into the Weird Darkness. Well, you really screwed up this time, didn't you? You found a gnarly deal on a beautiful home that almost seemed too good to be true, and you jumped at it. And now that you're all moved in, you've started to notice some anomalies. You know the type. The spooky dooky anomalies of the supernatural persuasion. Bumps in the night, doors opening and closing by themselves, auditory hallucinations of voices and whispers. It's more common than you might think, but not everyone realizes the danger. These signs could be proof that some forsaken lost souls inhabit your property. Maybe the previous grandmother self-immolated in the attic. Maybe dear old dad went suddenly insane and repainted the house with the blood of his children. Or mom tried seducing demons in the basement. If this sounds even vaguely familiar to you, and you're looking to the good old internet for help, then you've come to the right place. You see, I have this friend, well, had this friend, named Nathan. A couple months back, Nathan found a house for sale in southern Georgia. It was nestled along a remote stretch of woods just outside of Waycross. It was a historical area, an old colonial-style home just under 5,000 square feet, six beds, six bath, with white picket fence and a dozen acres. The quintessential American dream house by all accounts. The price was unbelievably low, but after Nathan contacted the real estate agent, he found that the price that he'd seen listed was indeed the price that was being asked. For most people, I imagine this probably would have raised some pretty big flags, but Nathan was an idiot. The confident type of idiot that believed machismo is substantial for conquering all of life's obstacles. I know it's not kind to speak ill of the dead like that, spoiler alert, but I'm just trying to give an accurate portrayal of the kind of person Nathan was. You know, the alpha male who hits on your girlfriend, lives at the gym and falls in lust with his own selfies. For people like Nathan, friend is really just another word for ego reinforcer. He was cocky and often let pride get the better of him. His wife Janelle was actually my ex-girlfriend from a while back. Bit of a skank, but practically a supermodel. They had two kids, Natalie and Mason, who were both spoiled brats. Again, I'm just trying to give an honest perspective of them in hopes that we may all learn something from what happened. You see, what happened to Nathan, which I'll get into later, was something which I believed could have been easily avoided if only he'd followed a few simple instructions. After the funeral, I got to pondering on the matter and realized that what we all really need is a set of rules to follow if you believe your house is haunted. Let's begin. Rule number one. When looking to purchase or rent a house, always ask for the history. Odds are, if a house is being offered at way below market value, then there's a very good reason for it being that way. Nathan didn't do this and thought that the undermarket price was simply the universe handing him something he didn't really earn, as it often seemed to do. Nathan jumped at the offer, and within a few weeks, he and his family were approved to begin moving in. I volunteered to help them move in, and I'll be honest, the house was absolutely gorgeous. Things were great for them, at first, but Nathan soon started noticing some odd occurrences. It started with this knocking sound that seemed to reverberate all over the home at odd hours. He said he could never seem to pinpoint where it was coming from, and it never seemed to originate from the same place twice. Eventually, he just chalked it up to the house settling, but that was just the beginning. Rule number two, trust your gut. Your home is the last place you should feel uncomfortable. If you get that inkling of discomfort in the back of your mind that never seems to fully dissipate, pay attention to it. It's probably your subconscious trying to warn you. Nathan tried ignoring these sounds, told his wife that it was just normal or the wind, and comforted his children when they felt scared. He had two dogs, Rusty and Sailor. Both of them black labs, and both seemed to become very anxious after moving in. Nathan did his best to get medication to help the dogs relax, but it didn't seem to help much. That brings us to rule number three. Along with your gut, you should also trust your pets. Animals have instincts far greater than humans. It's been said that man is the only creature who will sense danger and still wander into it. Animals have a sense for the supernatural, dogs and cats in particular. If you find them growling at what appears to be nothing or constantly staring in specific areas of the house, then pay attention to that. Odds are they can see something you can't. Nathan told me that Rusty, the older of the two dogs, would pace the hall each night for hours. He said it was like he was standing guard over something. On more than one occasion, Rusty suddenly blurted into a ferocious bout of barking and snarling. Nathan would come out into the hall but never found anything. He grew concerned for Rusty and took him to the vet, but the vet confirmed he was in good health. Meanwhile, Sailor, the younger dog, slept at the side of Mason's bed each and every night. The poor boy developed crippling nightmares that would torment him relentlessly, and Sailor seemed to sense it. Each time Mason would wake up screaming, Sailor would be there to try and comfort him. And that segues perfectly into our next rule. Rule number four, beware the nightmares. Young children are similar to animals in the way they seem more perceptive to things that adults are not. This one can be difficult because there are many root causes of nightmares with things like anxiety, depression, and other mental illnesses. The telltale sign is whether your child suddenly develops them soon after entering the home. Poor Mason had absolutely horrific dreams, and night after night he would be tormented by them. He often spoke of the blurry man that came to him while he slept and whispered terrible things. He even said that sometimes he'd see the blurry man while he was awake, but never more than a quick glimpse, and always in the shadows or outside in the woods. Nathan and his wife worried that perhaps Mason was schizophrenic, but multiple doctors confirmed this was not the case. They tried giving Mason sleeping pills, various supplements, and burned incense to help him sleep more peacefully. It worked for a while, until Natalie started having nightmares too. Rule number 5. Try to determine what kind of spirit you're dealing with. If you see flashes of a small child running through the halls at night, or orbs spiraling in the air, then odds are your ethereal neighbor is rather benign. Some people even discover they rather enjoy life with a spectral roommate and find their antics to be rather interesting. Most believe that spirits who pass away before completing what their soul desired will become stuck in a sort of purgatory. Many are scared, confused, and angry, but some, primarily young children, seem to be almost jubilant at times. Most of these are unnerving but altogether harmless. But then there's the other spirits. Rule number 6. If you or any member of your family develop inexplicable bruises, cuts, or lesions, then do not take them lightly. This should be a massive red flag and is a very bad sign. If you feel as though you are being attacked as you sleep and wake up with unexplained scratches or wounds, then just get the hell out of the house, honestly. A malevolent spirit capable of inflicting physical wounds is not something to be trifled with. Odds are it's a demon, and honestly, that's the best-case scenario. There are other non-Abrahamic-related entities that could be responsible as well. They're very rare, but if encountered, well, I'm afraid even my handy set of rules won't be enough to stop them. Natalie and Mason suffered multiple scratch marks, wounds, and even a few bruises that almost looked like bite marks. Nathan's wife, Janelle, was also subjected to these attacks. The children's teachers at school began to notice and became quite worried for their safety. Obviously, their first thought was not paranormal, but rather that the children were being abused at home. Only when social services threatened to remove the children from his custody did Nathan finally agree to move them out of the house. Janelle and the kids moved in with her mother a couple hours away, and Nathan was left all alone with the dogs. Rule number 7. Let people know what's going on. Yes, I know, the thought of admitting to a close friend that you believe your house is haunted might be a daunting one, but it's usually better than the alternatives. The modern world rarely takes these claims seriously. We put ghosts in movies and video games, but when someone actually claims to see one, we aren't so quick to believe them. Technology and science have led us to believe that we're safe. That's our folly, but it's also a topic for a different day. This is yet another rule that Nathan did not abide by. The worse that things got for him and his family, the more secluded he became. On numerous occasions, he phoned the police saying that he believed someone had broken in, but they never found evidence of it. Eventually, they even put him on a blacklist and warned that any further contact would result in legal trouble. Rather than tell his parents or brother or any of his friends what was going on, he retreated into himself. He became fidgety and paranoid, at times refusing to return phone calls and texts from his loved ones. He just broke contact, and things only got worse. Rules 8 and 9 sort of belong in the same category, although one is a little more extreme than the other. Rule number 8, if you suspect something is up, it doesn't hurt to perform a cleansing. Like I said earlier, the modern world has little time to entertain the notion of ghosts and the supernatural, but that shouldn't ward you off. If you're unsure about whether your home is being haunted or not, then a routine cleansing can do wonders for you. I'm willing to bet there are mediums and priests in your town that can get the job done. Even if you can't find anyone local, you can always just go online and find instructions for yourself. It's not as effective that way, but it's better than nothing. Rule number 9, if you're really feeling as though you are in danger, get someone to perform an exorcism. It's the step that no one wants to take, but desperate times call for desperate measures. Priests and spiritual leaders are your go-to for these kinds of things. Even if you yourself are not religious, these people honestly do know how to help. There's some evidence that Nathan was attempting to do this, but it's unknown why exactly it didn't work out. Maybe he second-guessed himself and thought he couldn't handle it, or maybe his ego took control once again. Nathan had been collecting evidence for a while and had amassed quite a stash of clues. He had audio recordings which relayed banging on the walls and footsteps in the attic. He took multiple videos, but none of them really showed anything except for the last one. But by that point, it was too late. In his journal, he also wrote that he experienced items in the house levitating on several occasions, but sadly, he had no recorded proof of this. Rule number 10, the big one. Whatever you do, don't try to antagonize the spirit. This should really go without saying, but angrily challenging the spirit or daring it to manifest is a really bad idea. But as you may have guessed, Nathan and his unlimited stream of testosterone decided to do just that. He got really drunk one night and began ruminating on all that had been happening. Nathan was always a skeptic, but even he couldn't ignore the psychological impact on his family, whether it was imagined or not. He realized his relationship with his children and wife were being heavily strained, and his new house had become a place of hostility. This made Nathan very angry. So, Nathan stood up and shouted at his empty house for the spirit to come forth and face him. He was met only with silence, so he shouted again. Never once did the spirits answer his call. After a few more verbose challenges, he broke into a bout of laughter, probably believing himself to look ridiculous. Apparently, not everyone who was watching felt the same, though. Nathan managed to stumble into bed not long after and was out cold within a couple minutes. Nathan had kept a security camera in his room in hopes of capturing proof, and that night, he found something. At around 2:13 a.m., Nathan is seen beginning to stir in his sleep in the security video. He grunts and speaks briefly, but the words were unintelligible. Suddenly, his eyes sprung wide open in the bed and began glancing around the room. Nathan appeared to be struggling, but his body didn't move. It's believed he was suffering an episode of sleep paralysis, which left him temporarily paralyzed. His eyes continued to dart rapidly around the room, then something happened that no one who saw the video could explain. The bedroom door slowly rolled open, but the darkness of the hallway was all-consuming. Nathan's chest began frantically pumping up and down, and his eyes stretched wide open. Something was then seen moving in the hall. It could have been chalked up to a trick of the light at first, but then a hand was seen reaching through. It was gnarled and spindly, like the wretched malformed appendage of some abysmal denizen. The figure slowly sauntered through the doorway, its tall, dark silhouette nearly grazing the top of the doorframe. It had no definite features, appearing only as a hooded, humanoid individual. No eyes or face, just a shadow made corporeal from Nathan's deepest nightmares. Poor Nathan was heard mumbling and whimpering frantically, but in his paralyzed state, he was unable to fight back or flee. He could do nothing but watch in absolute horror as the thing approached him. It stopped at the foot of his bed and just stared at him for about a minute. Nathan continued to hyperventilate and didn't appear to blink once during the entire ordeal. The thing then finally moved closer. It then leaned down only a couple inches away from his face and appeared to whisper something. It was too quiet for the mic on the camera to pick up, but needless to say, it did not make Nathan feel any better about the situation. Suddenly, the thing lashed out with its twisted hands, constricting like pythons around Nathan's throat. In his paralyzed state, he couldn't even struggle against his shrouded attacker. Within a minute, Nathan's chest stopped moving, and his eyes fell still. The entity retracted its hands and just stared at him for about a minute. Then, as if taunting those who would see the footage, it looked directly into the camera. It whispered something again, but again it was too quiet to discern what it was. And then as quickly as it had appeared, it waltzed out of the room and vanished back into the darkness. Nathan was found by his wife Janelle a few days later, and she called the police. After an autopsy, Nathan was determined to have died via strangulation, much as what was shown in the video. Cops scoured the premises and found footprints from the intruder. However, the footprints were soon matched to a pair of Nathan's own boots. The police, of course, were not so quick to believe that Nathan was simply killed by supernatural forces. They conducted interviews with neighbors, friends, and family members, but none of them seemed capable or motivated enough to have done it. There were no signs of breaking and entering, and nothing had been stolen from the home. They came to me and conducted an interview as well, but of course, that was a futile effort. I mean, sure, the fact that Janelle was my ex-girlfriend was reason enough to suspect me, but I quickly dissuaded their accusations. Nathan was my friend, despite him not really being a good friend. What kind of friend bones your girlfriend behind your back anyway? I'm not bitter about it, though, at least not as far as the police are concerned. My alibis were solid, and that's good enough for them. This brings us to my final rule. Rule number 11. Make sure you exhaust all other options before coming to the conclusion that your house is, in fact, haunted. If only Nathan had taken a little more time to investigate his home and himself more thoroughly, then maybe he'd still be alive today. Maybe he would have found the mini wireless speakers hidden in his attic to play the sounds of knocking. Maybe he would have found the patches in his air ducts that leaked mild doses of hallucinogenic drugs into his home. Maybe he would have detected the dog whistle alarm that caused his dogs to react so strangely. If he bothered to check himself, he may have found trace amounts of succinylcholine, a paralyzing toxin that, once ingested, will leave the person immobile yet conscious to all pain. It would have been difficult to find, as even coroners do not normally test for the substance unless specifically requested. No matter how you really slice it, this entire ordeal really comes back to Nathan himself. If only he'd been a better person and not constantly demeaned his peers at every turn. If only he hadn't been so stubborn and proud. If only he hadn't gone behind my back and boned my ex-girlfriend, thus ruining our future and sending me into the spiraling depths of crippling depression, then maybe I would have helped him. So you may be wondering, is this my confession? No, of course not. This is only my list of suggestions and rules for how things may have turned out differently for Nathan and his family. These are all hypothetical explanations and are in no way to be considered incriminating evidence to be used in court against me or anyone else for that matter. Besides, if this really was a confession, then that would make anyone who read it an accessory to murder, and we certainly wouldn't want that. I hope you can understand that, and I do hope that we can trust each other in this regard. After all, I have really good software for tracing IPs, and the modern web makes it incredibly easy to access them. We wouldn't want your house to suddenly become haunted now, would we? Creepypasta Thursday continues when Weird Darkness returns. Many of you have been asking for an earlier Weirdo Watch Party so you could participate too, so this one is for you. Put it on the calendar. This coming Friday night, July 24th, 7:30 p.m. Central. That's 5:30 p.m. Pacific, 6:30 p.m. Mountain, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Arachna from Beware Theater is hosting the Bela Lugosi classic The Human Monster from 1939. You don't need to buy a ticket. It's always free to join the Weirdo Watch Party. Just set a reminder on your mobile device, online calendar, smart home device, write it in blood on your refrigerator, whatever you have to do so you don't miss it. And this one's early enough that you can get to bed at a decent hour. Join us as Arachna brings us Bela Lugosi in The Human Monster. Again, it's this Friday night, July 24th at 7:30 p.m. Central. That's 5:30 p.m. Pacific, 6:30 p.m. Mountain, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, on the Weirdo Watch Party page at WeirdDarkness.com. I don't do cold readings anymore. I don't tell fortunes. I don't read tea leaves. And I will no longer contact the other side. Look, don't judge me, all right? It was an easy gig. I mean, the first time I did it, it was a joke. I did it just to impress a girl. You've been there, right? It was something I'd read about online and I thought I'd give it a go. Cold reading. I don't need to tell you that there's no such thing as a psychic. It's just extremely convincing, educated guessing. I know, if you believe in this stuff, you've definitely got a story to tell me that starts, "Yeah, most are fake, but this one time," and you'll tell me some incredibly specific thing that they couldn't possibly have known. Honestly, though, if I could have been there when you got your revelatory message, you gave them everything they needed. They just connected the dots. See, people aren't desperately unique. Not really. Hell, you only need 23 people before there's a 50% chance that two of them have the same birthday. You give me a crowd of 50 people, and I'll find someone born in August with an important L in their life. Luck, leads, Louise, and I'll have everything I need. It's not hard. People like a sense of pattern in their lives. It gives them a sense of control. It's why people like conspiracy theories. It's hard to think that everything really is as crap and meaningless and random as experience would imply. When someone flies a plane into a building, it's easier to think it's just another cog in some grand scheme than face up to the fact that actually it really doesn't take all that much other than a screw-up and a box cutter to completely ruin everything. Similarly, when you're holding the hand of a 5-year-old girl long after her long black hair has fallen out and she's looking at you for help and you can't, maybe it's easier to think it's just a crappy part of a bigger plan. You're both just changing lines for a bit, but you're heading to the same destination. So look, I'm not defending myself. I'm not saying I'm not a twat in all of this. I'm just saying that I never wanted to deceive people. I mean, not maliciously. I just thought I was providing a service, you know? An outlet, maybe. So when I did my cold readings, I got quite good at them. It's pretty simple, really. You're just a salesman. If you can sell a used car, you can sell a reading. It all boils down to two things: confidence and knowing your audience. Like, all right, I'll tell you a story. One of the first times I did it was in a bar. It was a chain bar, one of those where the menu was the same in every town and the happy hour hasn't changed since 2008. I was being introduced to a group of my girlfriend's friends, and so I was on my best behavior. Captain Charming, you know? So when Maria, all olive skin and deep down wavy hair, said that the women in her family always had a sort of gift for talking to the beyond, I saw a chance. So I read her. My girlfriend was 24 and they were university friends, so I guessed that Maria was likely a year either side maximum. She was thus probably a child of the early 90s. Young enough that likely her parents were still alive, but that she may have lost a grandparent or two. There were no rings on her fingers, so I guessed she wasn't married, and the way she was poured into that red cocktail dress pretty much counted out the chance of her being a mum. So, grandparents were the way in. The most common first letter in first names are J for men and A for women. For men, this is especially useful as it takes care of all the Johns, James, and Jacks, which have had staying power during the generations, too. "There's someone who wants to speak with you." Maria's eyes flicker with excitement. This is a good sign. "I'm getting an A." No reaction at all from Maria. Luckily, it's an easy conversation. "No, not an A, it's a J." Another flicker. She takes in a sharp breath. Bingo. "I think it's a James or a John? John, yes, John, my grandfather. He's here with us now." Now, most people at this point are still pretty skeptical. Maria was taking the bait with gusto, but most people would still be sat back in their chairs at this point. single eyebrow raised. Now you gotta hit him with something a bit more personal. With grandparents, it tends to be a pretty positive relationship that you're playing on. I mean, if it's a dead partner, there can be all kinds of baggage to unpack, but dead grandparents are usually a big bag of happy memories. So that's the card you play. If they're wanting to talk to grandparents, it's because they want to feel that same safeness again. First, though, gotta pull him in with something that seems specific. I see him watching over you, but I see a blackness in his chest or abdomen, that kind of area. It's a fair shot, usually. Something north of 85% of deaths of men over 65 are due to some form of complication around that area. But he wants you to know he's at peace, and he says that he sees you struggling with something, a choice perhaps. He's saying you should follow your heart and that you shouldn't worry about the money. See, that seems really personalized. But actually, when are we not toying with some kind of big choice? Even if it's not imminent, people are always juggling the idea of moving to a different house or job or changing something up with their partner. And what big choice doesn't have a financial implication? Or, moreover, who isn't worried about money literally all the time? Same as ever, feels personal but applies to everyone. Maria is almost breathless at this point and starts asking really direct questions that would expose me if I tried to answer them honestly. No, he's fading. He's gone back over. Boom. So that's how I got started. But then it got out of hand. See, Marie had bought the whole act. She told a friend who told a friend who told a friend. Soon I had people ringing me and texting me, asking me for readings. Then they started offering money. Well, cut a long story short, that's how I ended up on stage here, earning £2,000 for a two-night performance in the conference center of a crappy airport hotel outside Manchester. The first night was like any other night. The venue was about a third full. I was wearing my black suit with an open-collared blue velvet shirt, very 80s Butlins Entertainment outfit. I was scanning the room for easy marks, someone clutching at jewelry or a picture. The ticket asks them to bring something belonging to the person they wish to contact, so the second you see anyone with their hands full, you know you've got a gullible mark. And there she was, nervously spinning her wedding ring with a photo resting on her lap. Dead husband, my bread and butter. I sat with her and, well, there's a reason I don't do these anymore. I played it safe at first. I'm getting a J. She took a deep breath and started to react. Before I could get a chance to read her reaction, another voice called from the other side of the room. It's him, came the voice. Sometimes you get someone who's a bit over-enthusiastic. Someone who's so desperate to get in touch with their beloved that they'll assume that whatever voice is coming through is trying to get in touch with them, regardless of who the current mark is. It's why I stay away from sensing the letter R. Between the Richards and Dicks and Roberts and Bobs, half the room thinks they're being contacted. I got ready to politely ask the interrupter to sit back down, but there was nothing. No one. I turned back to the widow. She was steeling herself to get in touch with her J. I caught a brief glimpse of what I thought was the name Alan on the wedding photo in her lap and was ready to fix my pitch accordingly when the voice came again. This time, just a single word rang so loud it arrived with a blinding white. Him. My eyes focused again on the widow in front of me. She was taking little shallow rasps of breath and staring at me with eyes like a startled deer. I spun round to try and find the source of the yell, but there was no one. Did anyone else hear that? The crowd, assuming it was part of the gig, simply shook their heads. Catching my breath, I tried to get back on track. No, not a J, it's an A. Slam! Another bullet train of sound to the back of my mind. Him! It's him! I was knocked back a few paces. Panting, beads of sweat formed on my forehead. I pulled at my tie to loosen it. please, I pleaded with the crowd. Try not to shout when the voices are coming to me. It makes it hard to concentrate. What had been amused half-smiles or what they assumed was showmanship became puzzled, silent exchanges with the people sitting near them as I asked the silent crowd for quiet. I went a third time to speak to the widow, but the voice rung out again, popping in my ears as though it had been trapped in a bubble. Third row! Red shirt! Him! He killed me! I was still catching my breath, panting heavily. I scanned the crowd, and sure enough, there he was, third row, red, casual fitted shirt that looked expensive. Short brown hair in a modern professional cut framing a neutral, polite smile. Light brown chinos and brown leather shoes, arm draped around the shoulders of a nervous-looking blonde woman. I couldn't see her face as she held an unbroken look with her lap. Her hands gripped the blue velvet clutch on her knees. Her legs were pinned together with vice-like strength. Her shoulders drooped under the weight of his arm. Even as I met his eyes, he didn't let that neutral salesman grin drop. It was the grin of the man who's sold the car and is going in to sell the paint job. Him! It's him! It's him! My knees cracked with the punches of the sound, and I fell to the floor. I could hear the gasps in the audience. People were out of their chairs, craning their necks, and crowding to see what was happening. I told you that this gig is all about salesmanship. This was me losing the pitch. They wanted enthusiasm, not seizures. Back on my feet, the widow well at the back of my mind, I managed to rise, zombie-like, to my feet. I raised a pointed finger at Mr. Redshirt. "I'm getting a voice," I croaked. I pinched the bridge of my nose and put out an arm, evangelical style. What's your name? Gemma. My name is Gemma. She says her name is Gemma. Does that mean anything to you? Redshirt's grin spreads. Sorry, pal. Nothing to me, was his only reply. She's saying she knows you. Redshirt laughed. Never known a Gemma in my life. His companion raised her head at the mention of the name. Her eyes were wide and pricked with tears. Gemma's voice in my ears got louder and shriller and more panicked. I could feel my heartbeat in my eyes. Soon, I was simply parroting her words. She's saying you killed her. You killed her and buried her body out the back of Bleacher's Woods by the A-55. She's saying you were waiting for her after she finished work and you came up behind her and clocked her around the head and put her in the back of your white Ford Transit. The crowd was bustling by now. This was not what they'd paid for. They wanted financial advice from Granddad or to know that little Robbie is happy in heaven after he came off his bike and fell under the 681 bus to Salford. Not to have some sweating charlatan shouting accusations at innocent audience members. People were grabbing their bags and starting for the doors. I couldn't stop, though. By now, I was just a puppet for Gemma's voice. You thought I was out cold, you bastard, but I was just barely conscious. I felt everything. I felt you tearing my clothes. I felt the way you scraped my underwear against my thighs when you were too weak to tear them off in one. I felt the dirt as it landed on my back. I heard you pat down the soil before one type of darkness gave away to the next. The steadfast grin on the red shirt's face was back. I was alive, you bastard! Not even a hint of his grin slipping. Gemma's voice was fading, like someone being dragged away in a noisy bar, her voice replaced by the din of silence. No, not yet. You have to warn her. Amy! Amy! And with that, Gemma was gone. Like a puppet with the strings suddenly cut, my shaking knees buckled, and I fell to all fours and emptied my guts over the worn and dirty brown carpet flooring. People were streaming out now, muttering criticisms under their breaths. Worst show ever. Macabre nonsense. I told you we should have gone to the cinema. Redshirt strong-armed his partner out of her seat and started marching towards the door. I reached out from my prone position to try and grab the hem of her skirt, but she was already out of reach and I could barely stand. Through the sweats and the panting, I looked up to see Redshirt ushering the woman out the door. I thought I saw tears in her eyes. In the confusion and bustle of the crowd leaving the room, I thought I saw her reach out towards me, but Red Shirt had a firm grasp on her shoulder. He stared back at me, that same salesman grin on his face. And he winked, and they were gone. I stumbled to my feet, standing in my own vomit as I started towards the door. I burst into the foyer, desperate to try and find Red Shirt and his crying companion, but in the bustling crowd I couldn't see either of them. I just stood there. A wave crashed through again, a final hurrah from Gemma. Useless. Complaints about my performance flooded the venue, and they were forced to cancel the second night's performance. Of course, I'd already paid for the hotel room, so spent the second evening sat at the bar, trying my best to forget about Gemma. I was on the third whiskey when a tail-end news report caught my ear about a missing woman. The prim newsreader stated, "Police are appealing for witnesses in the disappearance of Amy Hochstetter, a woman from the Salford area who was last seen leaving the Quays Hotel Conference Center with an unidentified man. She'd been attending an event hosted by alleged psychic Theo Capewell, an event that she'd attended because, according to friends, she'd been hoping to contact her sister, Gemma Hochstetter, who disappeared last year. Anyone with information should contact." The rest of the report was lost to the din of the bar. Like I said, I don't do cold readings anymore. They're not cold enough. Thanks for listening. If you like the podcast, please share a link to this episode and recommend Weird Darkness to your friends, family, and coworkers who love the paranormal, horror stories, or true crime like you do. Every time you share a link to the podcast, it helps spread the word about it, growing our weirdo family. It also helps get the word out about resources available for those who suffer from depression. So please, share the podcast with others. Do you have a dark tale to tell of your own? Fact or fiction, click on Tell Your Story at WeirdDarkness.com and I might use it in a future episode. All stories on Creepypasta Thursdays are fictional, and you can find source links or links to the authors in the show notes. 11 Rules for Idiots Who Bought a Haunted House was written by Zacharias Frost. The Reason I Don't Do Cold Readings Anymore was written by Kevin Thomas. And Tonight's Entertainment was written by Cantuno. Weird Darkness theme by Alibi Music. Weird Darkness is a registered trademark. Copyright Weird Darkness 2020. If you'd like a transcript of this episode, you can find a link in the show notes. And now that we're coming out of the dark, I'll leave you with a little light. Proverbs 15 verse 18. A hot-tempered person stirs up conflict, but the one who is patient calms a quarrel. And a final thought, for every minute you are angry, you lose 60 seconds of happiness. Ralph Waldo Emerson. I'm Darren Marlar. Thanks for joining me in the Weird Darkness. One of the greatest challenges when dealing with depression is the feeling of hopelessness and that you're alone, that nobody understands. But you're not alone, and there are many, many others who know what you're going through, and they're a couple of clicks away. My friends at ifred.org have partnered with a company called 7Cups to do their hope training. On the 7Cups app or website, you can live chat with somebody for free, browse through some of the members to connect individually, join a group discussion with others also battling depression, again, for free. There's a lot of support and resources to take advantage of. It has a little bot called Nani to help you get around when you first sign up so you can find everything there is to experience in the 7Cups app. You can even choose to talk to a professional therapist about your own depression. ifred.org has really outdone themselves on this one. You can find the 7Cups link at ifred.org. Since hopelessness is the primary symptom of depression, going through ifred.org's hope training is a great place to start dealing with hopelessness today, right this moment. visit ifred.org to find a link to the training and learn more. That's ifred.org.